moments will be lost in time. Like tears in rain. Time to die.
Welcome to the 250. I'm Danielle, and I'm sitting here with
Graham,
EIC of the Georgetown Voice.
Thank you. That's a very nice introduction.
Yes. we're back from a pretty long hiatus. Sorry about it. Junior year is hard.
Yep. Applications, yeah. Midterms, everything.
Yeah, it's all just happening a mess. It at once. But today we're here to talk about much lauded Blade Runner.
Yes.
Yeah. So, general thoughts about the movie.
So, my relationship with this movie is odd because this is going to sound weird. Bear with me. It took me until the fourth time seeing it to fall in love with the
movie. That's not weird.
Okay, really?
No,
okay, good.
I watched it. I think I started it one time just on my own. I was like, I can't finish this. And then I had to watch it for class, I think, or I watched it again for some reason, and then I watched it for class, and I was like, wow, this is a good movie.
Yeah, no, that's how it works. Wow. It's like, the first time I saw it, I was pretty young, and I didn't know anything about it besides, like, Harrison Ford hunting robots. This has to be an action movie. Nope, it is a very slow movie, but the first time I saw it was on the Sci-Fi Channel, didn't really like it that much. I was just like, you know,
it's kind of
boring.
Was that broken up by commercials?
Yeah,
well,
that was the other thing.
God,
so it took,
I can't imagine watching it for the first time. Yeah.
But then the third time we were watching it in my film class, so I watched it outside of class before, and I was like, hey, I kind of like this. Watch it in the film class. And I was like, this movie's unbelievable. Yeah. I watched it again last night and just, I could barely pause it. I don't know what it is, but it just like,
yeah, it's a slow burn, this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will definitely say. So yeah, this movie is, I'll give you a plot synopsis. But okay, so Blade Runner follows, who is it? Harrison Ford's character's name is Deckard.
Rick Deckard.
Deckard, yeah. Yes. But he usually goes by Deckard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he is this like police dude. He's like really broody and stuff. And he is known for hunting down replicants in this world, basically robots that are very humanoid, that are made to just serve humans, and a lot of them go rogue because, you know, like, sentience. And so he's basically commissioned to hunt down this group of replicants that have gone rogue, and the story continues from there.
Yeah.
Hopefully you've seen it. Spoilers.
Well, and what's odd is, like, that synopsis makes it sound like a hunt movie, like an action movie, but it's not. There are scenes of action along the way, but it's not an action movie.
So slow. Okay. So, first thing we're gonna get into is he a robot or not?
Okay.
There are, like, a million fan theories about this.
So, I'm gonna go with no.
No.
No. I know that a lot of the evidence points to...
It points to yes, though.
You have to give me a second to get through my thoughts.
Why?
Okay, so, first off, I think you really miss his whole character arc. Mm-hmm. If he's a replicant, then it's a cool plot twist, but I think it reverses his whole character arc, because Deckard's character arc is about understanding that replicants... Like, what sets the replicant apart from the human? Like, mm-hmm. the replicant has memories that are implanted. They have emotions. They have feelings. And, like, when he goes to talk to Rachel, she's practically indiscernible from a human being.
Yeah.
And the whole point of his character arc, I think, in the movie is he starts out, you know, he's kind of reluctant. He doesn't really want to go back to it. We never understand exactly why he's out of the game. But he comes back in, and you see the guilt that progresses throughout the movie after he kills the different replicants. And I actually think that if he is a replicant, that takes away from Harrison Ford's performance, because I think Harrison Ford gives a really good performance where you see a lot of the nuances of Deckard as this, like you're saying, like this brooding hero, but at the same time filled with a lot of grief and filled with a lot of guilt about what's happened. Is he so? I guess I have to change my answer. I don't know if that precludes him from being a robot.
So
I have to change my answer. I want him to not be a replicant, but I think he is. Okay.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
I think he is a replicant given the evidence that the movie gives us.
Okay, yeah. I also think he is a replicant. Like, I didn't get that. I didn't even get that like plot point until like the third time I watched it. But like, so I watched it the first time, and I was like, the second time, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And then I watched it in class, and I was like, oh, he's totally a robot.
Because
like,
the first two times I saw the unicorn dream, I was like,
what is going on? Yeah.
Why is this movie done this?
Yeah,
and then
so the movie
you realize the end.
Yeah, so the movie's based off of the short story, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And in that movie, animals are actually a very big part. Like, they're kind of a big part.
So I've read the book, and it's a lot different. Like, the premise is the same, but the way it goes about it is a lot different. But Philip K. Dick actually loved... He didn't see the final cut, but he saw, like, the rough cut before... Because he died a few weeks before Blade Runner was released.
Oh, so he didn't even get to see the abomination that was the film release.
Yeah, no, he didn't see the
Thank
first
God.
One. But he saw it and said that this was the world I imagined.
Wow.
Even though the story itself is much, much different than Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. But that's a good book. I recommend picking it up if you get a chance.
Yeah. So in the book, like, animals are a really big part. And, like, he dreams of the unicorn, and that's because, like... Don't they dream of animals? Like, that's...
I'm trying to remember exactly
what it is. Like, in the movie, they dream of animals.
So,
like that.
Hold on, I read it a very long time. I remember the big difference is Deckard has a wife. There's a character named Isidore who isn't in the movie at all. And it's... I don't know. It's kind of more of a straightforward telling. But I'm trying to remember the stuff about dreams. Because in the movie... Essentially what happens is, midway through, you see a dream. Deckard is standing, he's sitting at a piano just pressing the piano keys. And it cuts to this image of a unicorn running through a forest, and it cuts back to Deckard. Never gets referred to again until the very end.
With the origami. And I think the guy knows that he's a replicant. Basically, he's like telling him, like, you are not a person, like, go run, be with the other robot girl who's, like, he's in love with.
The theory is that Deckard is the replicant and Gath is the Blade Runner assigned to supervising Deckard. Because then why would Gath always be, like, with him?
Fair. Oh, that's cool.
Which makes a lot of sense. The problem, though, now that they're making the sequel, that takes place 33 years.
24, something like that. Like,
it's 2049 from 2019.
2015.
30 years later.
Yeah.
Check my math. Yeah,
we're supposed to be close to the world of... Blade Runner run, right? We're supposed to be there.
And you see an aged Deckard, so that means that I guess they gave him a longer lifespan than the Nexus 6s.
Well, I know, like, the Nexus 6s, I think Rachel's her name, right? The girl?
Yeah.
She, wasn't she, like, kind of like a prototype?
She, yeah.
So, I'm still thinking he's still a replicant. Because there's the part, there's this one super, like, really small part where he's talking to Rachel, and... they're in the dark, and you know how the replicants have, like, the eye thing going on? Like, he has it. And I'm, like, sitting in there, and I was like, oh, it's a thing!
Everyone talks about that. Harrison Ford said that was just a lighting mistake.
Okay, Ridley Scott was like, huh, that's a theme that's running through my movie.
Yeah.
And no, there's no way. I don't believe it.
I think if that was the only instance of the evidence that Deckard was a replicant, then I think that you could write it off. But given the origami... this is actually something I noticed the most recent time I watched the movie. All of the pictures in his apartment are, like, black and white and have really, like, they look like they're from a very long time ago. So this could very well be planted. This movie has so much to unpack, which is mostly why I love it so much.
So basically, there are fan theories abound about this movie. People are, like, very obsessed with, like, looking at the very minuscule parts of the movie and trying to figure out if he's, like, legitimately a robot or not. So there's a whole, like, wiki dedicated to Blade Runner. Because Blade Runner is one of those people who's like, I love film. Blade Runner is the best film. Yep. And you're like, okay.
It's like the definition of a cult classic.
It is, basically. So they bring up the point about Gath, like, does he know? And I think he definitely knows.
Yeah.
And the origami. Because
how would he know about the unicorn?
That's the thing. Like,
how would he know? You know, I read something that said that, Rachel is the unicorn or something. That's how Gath knows. I don't think so. I think it's much simpler than that.
No. Yeah, so someone on Reddit wrote this, like, whole thing. I didn't read the whole thing, but he's got some bolded parts, so I will read those. This is someone arguing that he's not a replicant. So the first one is that in the source material, Deckard is a human.
That is the least convincing argument.
Philip K. Dick's book, in the book,
yes, he's definitely a human.
So in realizing Dick's vision in the movie, Scott strayed very little from the basic themes of the book. And so, since Blade Runner can be seen as an abridged version of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, there's no way that Deckard could be a replicant because Yeah. So I don't really that's buy their
that.
First
I don't think that, that's weak reasoning.
Yeah. Okay, so basically they think that the unicorn does not mean that Deckard is a replicant. So I'll read verbatim. It says, "Dreams represent subconscious fears related to the character experiencing them. In the body, Gordy dreams of his friends pulling him underwater. And naturally, this does not mean his friends are literally going to drown him." I guess the reference is another movie. "But rather, his friends will hold him back or prevent some matter fulfillment. The same logic is applied here. That the unicorn, a symbol of innocence and beauty, sheds its skin to reveal a machine-like endoskeleton beneath. Let's not forget that the unicorn is running either towards or from something."
I'm sorry, no.
This is, yeah.
That's way too far.
Yeah. If then the machine how does, unicorn does, is running
does
from
he explain
something,
how Gaff knows?
It could represent his suppressed fears. Let me see. No, they don't even...
So
oh, wait. Okay. Furthermore, there's no intrinsic evidence in the film to suggest Gaff knew, or could in any possible way know that Deckard is what Deckard is thinking. The statement is supposition. The unicorn origami at the end is indeed ambiguous, especially relating to Deckard's dream. But recall, Gaff created origami earlier in the film. Ambiguity towards the metaphorical question of Deckard's humanity is the most it can suggest.
So, okay. So to go against that, Gaff makes the origami to poke fun at Deckard.
Yeah.
The first one is a chicken, because Deckard doesn't want to come back. The second one is a guy with an erection, meaning that Deckard is either attracted to Rachel or just excited to be back in the game.
Yeah.
So the third one is a unicorn, Gaff's way of saying, "You're a replicant, I know exactly what you're thinking, I've been a step ahead of you this whole time."
Yeah.
And that, I think, Gaff is the most interesting character, because we get no backstory, very little screen time with him, but at the same time, he seems to know, like the line at the end when it's too bad she won't live, but then again, who does? He clearly knows exactly
like,
what's going
go live,
on.
Like you're
yeah, exactly. And the original cut of the movie, the ending was Rachel and Deckard driving off into the countryside in a really horribly,
sunset.
Yeah, like a horribly cliched ending.
Yeah.
But it, I don't buy that. I think Gaff is the key to the whole movie, and Gaff is the key
yeah.
to the
Scott
fact that,
himself yeah. thinks that.
Harrison Ford disagrees, but I don't know.
I would trust Ridley Scott
more
than
I trust the director more than the actor.
Yeah. So I also wanted to talk about the ending, because the ending is like probably one of the most famous parts of Blade Runner. There's that whole scene where I don't know any of them. The Nexus 6, the blonde one.
Roy Batty.
Yeah, Roy Batty. He basically, there's this, like, really huge, just, like, heavy-handed Jesus metaphor at
oh,
the end.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, oh, God. And he gives this speech, and it's, like, probably, like, it was apparently improvised.
So the speech itself was written except for the line, "like tears and rain." That
yeah.
part was improvised.
Okay. But yeah, it's, like, so what do you, I find the ending, that part of the ending, I don't know if I like it.
So I love the speech. I don't
really
like the
speech.
Really
is great.
Like
the speech
the,
is lovely.
Yeah.
It helps themes. It's like very, it's very good. But
for
like,
a movie that is supposed to be, you know, nuanced and layered and subtle, like him stabbing the nail
through his
hand. So you
okay.
understand why it's happening, but it's so obvious.
It's like,
he pulls
Jesus.
The nail out and stabs it through, and you see the nail coming out the other side. Like, it makes sense in the context of the film because he's dying, he's losing control.
Yeah.
But and then the dove, which apparently was
where
also
did it come from?
Yeah. What's weird is rewatching it. Like, there are pigeons in the building, but he just walks to the edge when Deckard's hanging off, and he walks in, and there's that shot of with the fan behind him. He's looking down at Deckard. He has the dove in his hand already. Did he think
why?
To... I don't know. That
he's like,
part,
maybe I'll need this for a dramatic death. Let me
yeah.
hold on to...
So, that part was a bit too far, I thought. For a movie that is as restrained and subtle, that
yeah.
part was too far.
Yeah.
Yeah. With that being said, I do love the ending, the fight, but not really a fight, but it's more
just
of
like
a,
like
the whole scene between
like the
Batty
fight
and Deckard.
Scenes are very drawn out and very measured.
Yeah,
I feel
because you feel everything that like I hate the scene when Deckard's standing at the wall and then Batty grabs his hand and breaks his fingers one by one. Mm-hmm. That part, you know, again, you
oof.
Feel everything.
You're like, no, no, no,
and
no.
you're kind of afraid for Deckard, which I think is
yeah, it's
good.
Yeah. I also wanted. Sequel, yes or no?
Initially, no. Very anti-sequel, but after seeing the trailer, the fact that Denis Villeneuve is directing it, and he, in my mind, could do no wrong,
I'm
very excited.
we'll
I'm actually
see.
Really, really excited. They have the look of the film down. The people making the film are incredibly talented. Harrison Ford's back. The cast is unreal. I'm actually really excited. Where once I was really angry that they were going to make a Blade Runner
sequel.
I just,
like... no more sequels. Please.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's, like, the best sequel ever, I can't get on board.
I think...
That was
my initial reaction. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt until I see more of the film and decide that, maybe this is...
They could bring back my favorite... I don't even know what my favorite film franchise is, but they could bring it back from the dead when I thought it was long gone. I'd be pissed.
Yeah.
I'd be just like, can you... No. Please, no.
Well, yeah, because what's interesting is that one of the big problems with this movie, as just a pure cinematic experience, is you don't really like any of the characters.
It's
like, Decker is kind of a dick.
He's kind of, like, broody.
He has an interesting character arc that you really need to read into the movie to see, but if you just watch it, again, like I said earlier, I love Harrison Ford's performance, but the first time I saw it, I really didn't like it.
It's just like,
I didn't like his performance because Deckard was just not a likable character. Yeah. Rachel was not a very compelling character.
I was going to ask, women in the movie.
Yeah.
None of them are
so
compelling.
So the rape scene doesn't hold up. That scene...
It does not hold up. I get the point that she's a robot. Like, I get, like, they're trying to, like, she's a robot, she doesn't really have free will, and that's, like, I guess that's the point they're trying to demonstrate, but you're like, please, no, yeah. And then she, like, falls in love with him, and you're like, oh,
You don't buy the romance at all between them.
God.
I think that's actually the biggest weakness of the film, is the relationship between Rachel and Deckard.
I just like any just of the ones. Really it's work. Really just like Rachel and the two other female replicants, right? And that's it.
Well, because it's Rachel, Pris, and Zora.
Yeah.
Zora is the stripper.
Zora's the stripper.
Who gets shot
Rachel's
after running away.
Rachel's the one that
away.
Seduces J.F. Sebastian.
Yeah.
And then Rachel is just kind of a non-entity.
Yeah. So that's definitely problematic.
Yeah.
But I do think that what's interesting is that I would describe most of the characters more as fascinating. Like, Tyrell is a very fascinating character, even though he's only in two
scenes. And his, like, scenery is so interesting.
Yeah,
Like, it's very, like, he's, like, a god, and, like...
The Pharaoh, and then the chess game between J.F. Sebastian and, actually, now that I think about it, J.F. Sebastian's probably the most sympathetic character in the movie.
He is.
Because he's just
a
good guy who's trying to help out. He's lonely and wants to be...
And, like, dying. Like, I love that, like, similarity parallelism between him and the replicants. Like, he is also experiencing
that's good writing right there. That's good writing of character motivation.
Yeah,
just the rest of the characters, you don't see Blade Runner for the characters, you see it for the world, and you see it for the production design and the story and the
forgive
themes.
Me, but I took a film class last semester. It's a very I'm a film minor, and so we all have to take Gateway to Film, and my professor was brilliant. He was, like, probably one of the smartest professors I've ever had at Georgetown. But we spent, like, maybe more than half the semester on noir films. And, like, Blade Runner is, like, the quintessential, like, noir film, like, brought up to the 80s. Like, the mood, the rain. It's always raining.
And that's, I think that's the thing I like the most about this movie is the noir aspects that I wanted to
And, like, it's more
about.
A style than a genre.
Because this is, is it cyberpunk? Is it? What's the term for this? Where it's old technology combined with futuristic technology.
I think it's cyberpunk.
Okay. Yeah. So I love that. Because the Blade Runner, if you just look at the scene, like, look at the – I love the shots of the cars flying through the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's so iconic. Yeah. There are a few movies that are this iconic.
The set design and, like, the just aesthetic of the whole movie is very –
it has a very lived-in sense where, you know, there's – it's gritty, it's dark.
Yeah.
All things that we kind of take for granted today. But the fact that they had to create this without using CGI practically, the effects still hold up. For the most part,
the effects are pretty great. Yeah. Like even the big video screens that are everywhere, and like, this movie is it's a very good movie.
Oh yeah, no,
it's also meta references to like everything, like where J.F. Sebastian lives. I forget what it's called. It's called the Bradbury Hotel. I think it's across street from the movie. No, that's a different movie. But it's like a reference to a hotel in Los Angeles that they used to film like everything. So it's just like. There's so many, like, references and just, like...
There's the scene in the famous tunnel.
That
a ton of movies in the 80s and 90s shot scenes, driving scenes.
Yeah.
And
like, it's like, that was, like, very purposeful. And,
And it just... It is a beautifully constructed movie that I think lacks humanity, but that's the point, is it's supposed to lack humanity.
Yeah.
And I love, this is one of my favorite movies. I could watch this movie over and over again and get a different thing out of it each time. Yeah,
it's a really good movie.
It's one of those, brilliant film.
I don't think it's one of those that you can be like, oh, let's watch Blade Runner with someone.
Yeah,
for
no. You're not going to,
like,
you know,
what is this?
You're not going to grab popcorn, get some friends together, and watch Blade Runner.
Yeah, it's
you
not.
Have to really explain.
Unless you have, like, other friends who are like, yeah, Blade Runner. Then yeah. You're all like, wow.
They understand what they're getting
yeah,
into.
Yeah, but, like, if someone doesn't understand, like, the real, like, just the movie in general, it's not gonna pan out.
It's also the movie itself, the way that, you know, the cityscape itself looks beautiful and sleek and gorgeous, mm-hmm. and when they're flying through, they're these gorgeous shots. But then they're, shots on the surface of the surface of the city are, you know, it's gross and crowded, and then I love Deckard as the hard-drinking, you know, reluctant detective who doesn't want to get... It seems like such a cliche now.
He's so, like, yeah, he's the exact noir detective,
yeah.
Like, to a T.
And I love when genres are meshed together well.
Yeah.
And this movie is probably, I would say, the best example of two genres, two very distinct genres being meshed together. Just the result is amazing.
Yeah. It's a great movie. Also, I wanted to ask you this before... We were talking about the sequel. Ryan Gosling, yes or no, in the movie?
Okay, Ryan Gosling, I either really, really like him or really, really don't like him.
He has two looks
yes.
in movies. He's either, like, lover boy or, like,
Drive. Brooding, like, yeah, no, I don't think he's a very good
Who's
actor.
Also lover boy.
Yeah. Like, have you seen Place Beyond the Pines?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so that's probably his best performance, but again, it's just basically Drive, again.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
If I had my way, I would have cast someone else. But you know what? I trust Denis Villeneuve.
That's a lot of trust.
I know. But did you see Arrival? Did you see Arrival?
Did not see Arrival.
Revival.
I need to see
incredible.
Arrival. I'm such a bad movie watcher and have not seen.
Well,
like,
okay, so
I've seen Fences, Hidden Figures. I think that's it.
I haven't seen those two, so you got me on this.
We're good.
So Denis Villeneuve, he directed Prisoners, Enemy, Sicario, and Arrival. All very dark, intense films. So I think his style works very well for Blade Runner. That's why I'm really excited. I also just think he's an incredibly talented director. And the fact that they have Harrison Ford back, their cast, Ryan Gosling, Jared Leto's in it. Although after Suicide Squad...
Jared Leto's in it?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think Suicide Squad was Jared's fault.
Oh, yeah, no, but his performance does not help the movie.
His performance? Okay, but the thing is, did you see the extended cut?
Okay, I saw part of it.
Okay, it was better than...
Okay.
Alright,
well this is probably another podcast.
Yes, this is for another time, but I will say Jared tried his best and it wasn't as bad as the original.
I think he actually
had scenes that he could act in.
No, the issue there is not with his performance. I don't think it helps the movie, but the fact that it's just kind of thrown in and the story itself is pretty
good. They put out the regular cut, it would not have helped or hurt the movie. It just would have just kept it as middle of the road as it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But that's
a conversation
for another time. All right. Time to guess. What number do you think this movie is?
I'm going to say... Last time I checked, I believe it either had an 8.2 or an 8.3. So I'm going to guess 145.
That was so close. It was 138.
Oh, wow.
I thought you were going to guess higher than yet. Yeah.
No, that's actually... Wow. Awesome.
Yeah, it's 138. I would have expected higher because it's one of those, like, cult classics. Like, this movie's so brilliant.
Yeah, like, you just don't understand it. You don't like it. Which I hate it when people say that. But I have read, it's worth noting that when this movie was released, it was panned.
Well,
people really didn't like
it.
Because the fact
was
that
also
they yeah.
the bad. It was not
with
what Ridley Scott wanted. It just,
yeah.
I have not seen the regular
I've seen scenes with the voice. The voiceover is awful. You know how at the end when Batty dies and his head goes down and then Deckard just looks at him and it's a very pensive scene. So in the original cut they have
a voiceover
there.
No.
And it explains exactly what Deckard's thinking and it's awful.
Oof.
It's really
bad.
It
takes all like the nuance and very like measuredness
out
of the movie.
Oof. But I've seen criticisms of this movie where like it's a beautiful film that is just muddled by the fact that the script creates incredibly unlikable characters, and there's no humanity to it.
Yeah.
Which, so I can understand not liking
I can kind of understand that, but also, I think nowadays, people don't feel compelled to have to like a character.
Yeah.
To enjoy
it. Because you can get others. There's also, it's boring. There are parts where it is very slow.
It is
slow.
Boring.
It is very slow.
If you've never seen the movie and start watching it, it's boring.
Like,
I'm sorry.
It's only about 2 hours, but it feels like 3 hours.
It's like an eternity, yeah.
Because of the long... I mean... Watching it after, taking some film classes and, like, appreciating the art of cinema more. Wow, that's so pretentious.
Yeah,
I appreciate the fact that Scott doesn't cut, like, he lets the shots drag out, and it's beautiful to watch. But I'm, again, like you said earlier, I'm not going to throw this on casually on a Saturday night and be like, hey, I haven't seen Blade Runner. Like, I have to sit down, get in a mindset to watch it, which I love about it. But, yeah.
Any final thoughts about Blade Runner?
Cautiously optimistic for the sequel. I'm trying to think. I think that's about everything. We are very much in agreement about this movie.
We are.
Which I'm a little disappointed by.
Okay, had I seen it the first time, we'd be like, what is this
movie? Yeah, no.
Listen. Okay, I fell asleep like 3 times. Like,
if you talk to like 12-year-old me who was confused why the previous 2 hours weren't just Harrison Ford shooting at robot. Like, iRobot. Like, something along the lines of iRobot.
There was one shooting scene, okay? Yep.
And, yeah, but now that I'm more educated.
Yes.
Now that I'm a film snob.
As a film minor, yes.
Yeah, no, the snobby sides of me. It's just, whenever we talk about this movie, the snob
in me comes out. It's like one of the movies that you have to be a snob to enjoy. You're like, you have to be like, I'm sorry, I get it.
You have to understand the movie.
And you're like, I'm really sorry, but like that's literally the only way that
And I hate it when people do that to me.
Yeah.
But I do it.
It's like you can't help but being a snob while talking about this movie if you liked it.
It is masterful.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to describe it.
All right. We good? All right. Well, you can follow the Georgetown Voice at GTown Voice on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. I don't know why I started with Twitter, but we're here. at DNHewitt96 on Twitter. Graham, yours is?
At GLPiro22, P-I-R-O.
If you want to listen to more podcasts, go on thegeorgetownvoice.com or subscribe to the Voice Podcast Network on iTunes. Also, check out our other sections on The Voice because they're pretty great, and check out our other podcasts. I think we're out.
Well, thanks for listening.
Bye.